You're listening to a Media Snackers podcast. Check us out at mediasnackers.com.
My name is David Sasaki. I'm the Director of Outreach for Global Voices, and I'm in Miami right now. We just finished up with the We Media Conference here in Miami, Florida.
Cool. Thank you for being with us, David. Really appreciate it. Give us a kind of top-line overview of Global Voices for anybody who don't know what that organization is.
Global Voices started about 3 years ago when two fellows at Harvard Law School's Berkman Institute came up with this idea to invite about 20 bloggers from around the world. They noticed that citizen media and blogs and podcasts were spreading far beyond just Western Europe and North America, and that it was really taking over throughout Africa, throughout East Asia, Southeast Asia, Latin America. And we wanted to get all of these voices together in one room to see how they felt about blogging, what they felt it was going to be like, whether it was a new form of media, a different type of conversation, and how kind of serious they were about the medium. So there were about 30 of us in that room. That was December of 2005, or 2004, actually. And from there, at that meeting, there was a lot of enthusiasm. There were a lot of really great ideas about how blogging could be furthered and how bloggers could have a conversation across borders and portray their countries to others around the world as they see their countries, rather than how foreign correspondents come in and kind of file their stories for big mainstream media papers.
Okay, and tell us now, because I know Global Voice has been going for a few years now, it's great stuff, great content, really empowered, like you said, the people on the ground. But you've got a kind of Rising Voices, which is a separate arm to it, and I know you're in charge of that. Tell us a bit about that side of it.
That's right. Well, about 6 months after this initial Global Voices conference, we started up the Global Voices blog. And it took a little while to get editors placed in each region. So now we have about 15 to 17 regional and language editors who translate content from Spanish to English, from Russian to English. And in fact, it then goes from English back to Spanish to Russian to Arabic. So there's really a multilingual conversation going across the different regions and topics. That blog has gotten extremely successful, and we've really formed a large community of around 250 authors who summarize every week the conversations going on in their local blogosphere. So, for example, we have one author, contributing author from Morocco, who will look in the Moroccan blogosphere every week and say, okay, here's some conversations that are going on in the Moroccan blogosphere, and I'm going to take the very best excerpts of what people are saying and thread together a story about how that conversation is being portrayed in the Moroccan blogosphere. What we noticed, however, is that even though there are basically bloggers in every single country today, that those bloggers tend to come from certain neighborhoods in the major cities, that it's not really representative of all the voices throughout the world. So we're talking mostly about highly educated people, usually from upper middle class neighborhoods, who have a good deal of media literacy, have a good deal of technology literacy, own their own laptop computers, have a lot of time to spend and burn in, and write all these, you know, beautiful posts that we're highlighting on Global Voices. But we wanted to get more representative conversation. So we applied for a grant from the Knight Foundation, which sponsors Rising Voices. And we said, you know what, we want to do some offline outreach. We want to go to different countries, to different regions in different countries where you just don't see any bloggers, where you don't see any forums, you don't see any podcasts, you don't see any videos or coming up on YouTube or pictures on Flickr. And we want to give workshops and teach people how to blog, how to use these media production tools. In fact, what we really want to do is support the people who live in those countries and have them go to these regions where there are no bloggers and have them do the trainings. So we decided to come up with this biannual grant competition. Every 6 months, we have a grant competition of micro grants of $3,000 to $5,000, which I guess the first time we did it was, when was that, July of last year, and we got in over 150 applications from more than 80 different countries. The response was really overwhelming. Wow. We didn't realize that many people really wanted to take advantage of citizen media, that they even knew, you know, what blogging was in a place like Nakuru, Kenya, where you just don't see many bloggers. Mm-hmm. But the eagerness was there, the enthusiasm was there, and we selected the best five projects, which were our initial five grantees and Rising Voices projects, and they've just taken off from there.
Wicked. And give us a flavor then about, you know, what people receive those micro grants and what they do with them.
Well, let's see. I'll go through the first five grantees that we had. There's Ipa okay. Barrio in Colombia, which is a project on the outskirts of Medellin, Colombia. It's one of kind of the most violent neighborhoods through the 80s and 90s. And now the violence has stopped. It's a very safe neighborhood and great, but it's still kind of a working class neighborhood that even people in Medellin don't know about it. You know, and then outside of the country, absolutely nobody knows about the community. Until now. Now it's really popping up on Google because of the work they're producing. There's Narijiban, which trains women in Dhaka, Bangladesh. The Bangladeshi blogosphere was very male-dominated before this project came in, and now there are about 30 to 40 new female citizen journalists who are doing amazing content. There's the Neighborhood Diaries Project, which is trains the children of the Red Light District in Calcutta, in India, and they are doing some great community reporting there. There's the Think, Build, Change Salon, which is in Sierra Leone, and they're interns that they are teaching how to use citizen media to document their internships to rebuild the country after, you know, decades of civil war, unfortunately. And finally, the last grantee was Voces Bolivianas, which is in El Alto Bolivia, which is a region that it's a 80% indigenous community of Bolivia that is kind of stigmatized in mainstream media as being the center of the gas war protest. And I think most mainstream media outlets see it as kind of just this bastion of communism and protesters, but you don't really see beyond that. You don't see what is El Alto really like, what's it like to live there. So they're producing small documentary videos of about 2 minutes, walking through the local market, interviewing people about what it's like, what's it like to get married in El Alto, what are the customs and traditions, how is the Aymara language mixed in with the Spanish language. You see a portrait of daily life in El Alto that you would just not get anywhere else.
And obviously then you're using social media and focus on there, and the question is, you know, we know why social media is so empowering. Do you come up with, you know, kind of barriers and challenges in existing countries or countries that don't understand social media and try to convince them to use it? Or do they think historically about, you know, maybe using print, for example?
I think, you know, the past 2 months, I came back to the United States about 2 weeks ago, but before that I was in Medellin, Colombia with the IPA Barrio Project for about 2 months, and I was leading a lot of the workshops on how to use it. And there's a steep learning curve, I think, to get into social media when you're so used to print, when you're so used to just receiving media all the time, and you sit in front of the television set, and maybe there are three or four channels, and you have your local newspaper. And so the idea of participating is really kind of a revolutionary idea that, for all of us, I don't think existed, 10 years ago. So it does take that kind of aha moment of, wait a minute, we can have this whole separate conversation, or we can also interact with these mainstream media outlets, which are also starting to get it, and allow comments in their newspaper sites and allow trackbacks and whatnot. So it definitely did take a while to... I think that the participants of the project, which tend to be younger, tend to be in their late teens to early 20s, they got it much faster. But it was the elders of the community. What we had to do, in fact, in Colombia, it's in this small community called San Javier La Loma, which is on the outskirts of Medellin. It's on this big hillside. It takes about 20 minutes to get there from downtown. And to really show off, to really make the community understand what these young people were producing, we had to gather them in the auditorium of the local parish and shine their movies, you know, their little 3-minute YouTube videos onto the parish wall using a projector and say, okay, this is what they're doing. And when they were able to see it in a medium, like a movie theater that they were familiar with, then that was kind of the aha moment for them. And they understood, okay, they're making media. They're producing media and they're distributing it. And the internet is kind of the newspaper where they're able to distribute their media. We also had a lot of technical obstacles when we were giving the workshops in the local libraries, small libraries. And because flash games are... I mean, one of the reasons that the libraries actually approached us and said, the libraries of Medellin, and they said, you know, we want our students, we've bought all these new classmate PCs and all these new computers, and the students are coming in and they're using them, but they're only using them for chat and to play flash games, and we want them to do something more constructive with these computers. So we went in and we wanted to give a workshop on how to use Picnic to edit the photographs and then upload them to Flickr.
Yeah.
And the library doesn't have the Flash plugin installed on their computers because for them that was their way of discouraging use of the Flash games that a lot of the students were using. But for us, it stopped us from using a lot of the tools that require Flash in order to do the editing. So there were quite a few technical obstacles like that.
That's interesting. You touched on, we come up with a lot when we go in and deliver our training, the exact same issues, the technical issues about people locking them down. But we'll wrap up this amazing kind of insight of what you guys are doing there with a question around the future. Give us a flavor about what's happening for you guys in the next couple of months to years.
The next couple months are a really exciting time because we've got another grant competition coming up in around May or June. We're going to try to do this every 6 months. And so we're going to have 5 more projects. We'll be announcing that around May, and they can look at that on the website. It's rising.globalvoicesonline.org. So we hope to get 5 more projects from communities and regions where we don't have any projects right now, and we really want some cutting-edge stuff around the world. And then after that, we're the Knight Foundation grant was for the first 2 years to get this project going. So we're going to keep trying to make it sustainable. We're trying to work with other corporations and foundations that are interested in encouraging new voices from communities where they haven't been before. And we might start focusing on some public health grant competitions, for example. So people who work in maybe an HIV/AIDS clinic in Southern Africa can write about their daily experiences. What are they, you know, what are their frustrations? What are they learning? What can they share with other people? Because I think that there are a lot of people around the world, especially as we're globalizing more and more and becoming so small, we have the same experiences and we would like to network with others who aren't in our local community or who aren't even in our country, but we haven't been able to because this social media phenomenon really hasn't spread out completely beyond the major cities, beyond the wealthy neighborhoods.
That's interesting, man. Well, I'd just like to thank you for giving up your time to speak to Media Snacks, Dave. It's been awesome.
Thank you, DK. This was great.
You're listening to a Media Snackers podcast. Check us out at mediasnackers.com.